Hi, I'm Karen Carpenter.
And I'm Richard Carpenter.
This is Dan and Shay.
This is Darlene Love.
This is George Thorogood.
This is Ingrid Michaelson. You are listening to The Sounds of Christmas
podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to The Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I'm very excited to have Sally and Ned here from Carpenter's Legacy. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
First, I have to say that when I came across the news that you guys had a Christmas album coming out, I kind of scoffed at the idea of a Carpenter's tribute Christmas album. And the reason I hadn't heard you sing, but the reason is that I get so many versions of Merry Christmas, Darling sent to me every year for the Sounds of Christmas station. And most of the time, they're from singers who should not be trying to sing that because they're trying to be Karen Carpenter, and they're not. And nobody has told them that they're not. So I went to your YouTube channel, and I played Merry Christmas, Darling. And the only word I can think of really is wow. It was just amazing. Sounded so much like Karen Carpenter singing Merry Christmas, Darling. I couldn't believe it. And I was instantly impressed and a fan. So I apologize for the few minutes of snobbery that I had to start with when I heard about what you were doing. It was just amazing. And I want to get into the Christmas music because that's probably why most people are listening. But I want them to get to know you guys a little bit first. So Sally, let's start with you. You've been acting and singing for a while, and you have been immersed in the Carpenters for almost 10 years now. How did you pick the Carpenters, or did the Carpenters pick you?
I think it was a little bit of both. I've always loved and preferred the music of the 60s and 70s, even though I was born in 1981, and I've been singing ever since I was a kid. And acting, of course, but singing really was always a big focus for me. And I was in chorus and a cappella groups, chamber singers all through grade school, high school, and college. And I actually went to school for visual art. So the singing wasn't an extracurricular thing for fun, but I always made sure that I was doing a lot of it. But it wasn't, by my late 20s, I finally had the opportunity to start training with singing professionally. And this is back in Vermont where I'm from, and studying with my voice teacher at the time. And then, I don't know, a few years into it, this was by 2013, he suggested maybe that I would want to put together a one-woman show. And I really liked the idea. There was no specific focus at that point for what the show would be. But once again, really loving the music of the 60s and 70s, we started reading through various songbooks. And then it was actually his idea. He noticed that my voice sounded very similar to Karen's. I already had that same kind of similar vocal quality, some very almost pretty much the same range as Karen, being an alto too all my life. And so I liked the idea, and we just kind of ran with it. And that's what the show ended up being, a tribute to the Carpenters. It's kind of a happy accident. And then I debuted the early version of the show in January of 2015 in Vermont. And I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And then brought it to New York City to a little cabaret theater that I'd done a show at the Triad Theater back in 2010 as a student. And it was performing that show that connected me to some people who encouraged me to come out to Las Vegas. And in doing so, Ned and I were introduced, and I needed somebody to play the role of Richard. And I moved out to Vegas in January of 2018, and we never looked back. So
the rest is history.
Yep.
Ned, you've been playing piano for as long as Sally's been singing. You've opened for names people know, Bobby McFerrin, Bonnie Raitt, Sheryl Crow. You've been in Vegas for a while. You were voted most likely to exemplify the spirit of Las Vegas. And you had your own show, Piano Follies, and there are still videos of that on YouTube. And you got to perform Rhapsody in Blue on Liberace's piano. How did that happen?
That was quite an honor. That happened quite a while ago. I've been in Vegas for a little over 24 years now. And I'd only been in Vegas about 1 or 2 years. And I was lucky that the word was getting out about my coming into town and people who need a piano player, music director. And at the time, the Liberace Museum was opening a new wing. And they had a lot of celebrities over. Siegfried and Roy came over and so forth. And so I got the invitation to play his mirrored piano. And it was interesting, too, because I had to sign this little agreement that I would wash my hands before I touched the keys and I would take care of it when it be, you know, and so forth. And since then, I've played many of his other pianos, although the museum, unfortunately, had closed a few years ago. His pianos are scattered all over the place. There's a mansion in Vegas that has two or three of them. And so I played some of the others as well. So yeah, it was quite an honor. He's a Baldwin guy. And so was Richard Carpenter. And so am I. I have a beautiful 6'3" Baldwin grand in my living room.
So you went from kind of a jazz background and Liberace to connecting with Sally and becoming the Carpenters. How did you guys put this show together?
Well, shortly, I think it was about 6 months before I met Ned, I started kind of changing the show. Well, to give you a little bit of background, the show started out as a cabaret show where it was just me and I had a pianist, and sometimes I would have a small band, but nobody was playing the role of Richard. And when I first put the show together, instinctively, I guess I just, well, it was a cabaret show, so I'm singing a bunch of Carpenter songs. I did choose to wear the costumes that were 70s, or some of them were exactly what Karen was wearing, but I wasn't really in character except for when I was singing the songs, and in between the songs, I would talk about the history of the Carpenters. So 2 years into it, I decided that, you know, I really want this to become a full-on impersonation show. That's what I want it to be. And I tried to think of how can I do this and change the show, but do it in such a way where I can do this on my own. So, because I didn't know somebody like Ned yet with all of his arranging skills, and he was really the missing piece. But prior to meeting him, I started changing it into the show the show that the Carpenters did in 1976. There's video footage of them doing it at the New London Theater, and it's also the London Palladium album that they cut. So because of the footage that's available on YouTube, I started really studying that. The dialogue, I transcribed it, and that's pretty much what Ned and I say on stage is what Karen and Richard said on stage. But it wasn't until I met Ned that we could really fully realize and put together this new version of the show. But I started integrating little things that I was able to do.
And you don't just sound like Karen, you also play the drums. A lot of people maybe don't know that Karen Carpenter was an amazing drummer, or maybe they've forgotten because it's the music and it's her voice that we know. But have you had an interest in drums, or was this because of Carpenter's legacy that you started to learn?
Yeah, I started playing the drums mainly because of the show. And I started taking drum lessons in 2016, back in the beginning of when the show was created, knowing that at some point I wanted to integrate a drum feature. Had I known that I was going to be playing the drums in this show, I wish that I had started taking drum lessons as a kid. I played the flute and the piano a little bit, but so I had a little bit of catching up to do. But by the time I got out to Vegas, and then with Ned's help, and then one of our drummers coaching me, they got me up to speed. So
she does an amazing job with it. She really brings the house down every time she does her solo. So it's fun.
Yeah, there are some videos on your YouTube channel, and I'll put a link to your YouTube channel down in the show notes so people can go check it out. But it is amazing. It's not just an act just for appearance sake. You're really playing, and you can Google Karen Carpenter's drums too, and you can see that as well. With Carpenter's legacy, reviews are amazing. Not just that people are having a good time, but that it becomes an emotional experience. Is there a particular song that usually has that effect on the audience, or does it vary from one performance to another?
I would say, obviously, a lot of their big hits or their emotional ballads do stir up some emotions, such as I Need to Be in Love and Close to You. But at the end of our show, we go into We've Only Just Begun, and we have a video slideshow. Now, the Carpenters did the same thing in their concerts. They would show videos of the band and family members and that sort of thing. So we decided to expand it and take it further, where not only do we show photos and images of the band and the Carpenters, then it starts to show me as a child and my family. Then it goes into Sally as a child and her family. So that way they get to know us. And it's very common for at the end of our show, when we had in Vegas, we have our merchandise area with albums and t-shirts and all that stuff. We always keep a box of Kleenex because there's always people who come up with tears in their eyes. I really miss Karen, and you were spot on and all that. Here, have a Kleenex, you know. So We've Only Just Begun, I would say, is probably brings out the most emotion with the end of the show and people missing what a great talent. The world really missed Karen, who passed too soon.
Yeah. And it's not just the reviews that I've been talking about. There's awards, there's recognition. TripAdvisor gave you the Traveler's Choice Award this year. You are 6-time winner so far. Best of Vegas for Best Impersonator. That's got to at least give validation, if not more. That must be amazing to get that kind of notice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were, the TripAdvisor thing came as a total surprise. So we're really excited about that. And yeah, the Best of Las Vegas voting season for this year just ended a couple weeks ago. And so we're keeping our fingers crossed. Results come out December 8th.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a 7th. And that way, 7X, when we put on our, if we add that 7 times, be perfect for Las Vegas. It's the lucky 7. So we're going for it.
And it's not just the reviews and not just the awards, but you also got to meet Richard Carpenter. What was that like?
Wow. So something we will never forget. Richard is, 77 years young. He has two big passions in his life, music and classic automobiles. And so he has an amazing car collection. At one point, it rivaled Jay Leno's car collection. But he decided to downsize it recently to only about 50 cars. And he has a private museum that's invitation only. It's called Yesterday Once More. And so we were very honored to receive an invitation from him. We went to his museum, and he loves to talk about automobiles. And I'm a car guy, too. I have a classic pink Cadillac convertible, of course, living in Vegas, right, with the big fins on the back. And it's one of the trophies. So we got to talk about cars. His passion is classic Chrysler. Although he has other cars, he has a Ford trying to think of what it is, original Cobra worth over $1 million, just one car in his museum. So so we got to talk about cars, but he also in the museum, he uses it as a way to honor Karen and the legacy of the show. He has one area with these multiple filing cabinets. He's very, very organized with all the memorabilia, and there's photos on the wall and everything. Think from A&M Records and the celebrities they work with, and photos of Karen and Richard through the years, their gold records and so forth. And so it was quite an honor to talk about that. Another thing was he has a Baldwin concert grand piano in his museum. So we were very lucky. He doesn't always do this, but we enticed him to have a seat at the piano and tinkle a little bit for us, you know? And so some we'll never forget. And that Sally, of course, looked gorgeous. She wore a beautiful red dress, and we got photos of her next to Karen's Mercedes there. And yeah, tell me what was that like? You care?
Well,
Sally, I called you.
I mean, I've been wanting to meet Richard since I started this project almost a decade ago. But then, actually, finally being able to have that experience, I was a little bit, I guess you could say, starstruck. So I let Ned do most of the talking.
Yeah,
she does well.
tell them about what you did when we found out that we were getting the invitation. You know, we were in Atlantic City.
Yeah, we were doing our show at Ocean Casino Resort in Atlantic City in mid-April. And Ned's brother was there, and we were having a late dinner, and I'm looking at my phone, and my jaw just dropped, and I started crying. And Ned's like, what? Like, we got the meeting with Richard.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was a really, really exciting moment getting the news. And then, of course, the surreal factor of being there in his presence.
And he was so kind too. He signed a poster for us, which will be on our wall for forever now, that he signed to us, you know, and we thanked him for that. He's very, very gracious, very, definitely a class act.
Yeah. I've heard great things about him, and I know he's quite the perfectionist. Whenever there is a Carpenter's re-release or something, it's something that he has meticulously worked on, and he gets the final say on it and all of that stuff. But it's nice to hear that he's still such a nice guy. That's very cool. You mentioned Atlantic City. I know that while Carpenter's legacy is a lot of the shows are in Vegas, I know you take it on the road. You went back to Burlington, Vermont earlier this year. What was that like, taking the show back home?
Yeah, I'd been wanting to bring this show back to Vermont really well since I came out to Vegas over 6 years ago. So we were able to bring the show. Actually, well, I lived in Burlington for like 13 years before I moved out to Vegas, but I'm originally from Rutland, Vermont, about an hour and a half south. And so we did the show there at the Paramount Theater. It's a beautiful historic kind of Art Deco theater. And it was a really, really cool kind of homecoming type of experience. And gosh, the media really kind of rolled out the red carpet for us. I was pleasantly surprised. We got a big story in the Burlington Free Press and the Rutland Herald. And then my NBC5 WPTC, which covers Burlington, Vermont, and Plattsburgh, New York, they did a big feature.
And we were very lucky too, because we were debating about whether or not to do a show in the winter. Like, no, it's too risky because of the travel and the flight. So we scheduled in April, and then guess what? A great big blizzard.
It was early April. I could have known better. It's still too risky.
Yeah, there was 3 feet of snow in where we were staying.
Yeah.
I had to shovel snow. I'm from the South. I don't shovel snow. So
we switched our flights. We ended up taking a red eye out of Vegas. Instead of going the next day, we did our show in Vegas, and then we went to the airport, took a red eye so that we could beat the storm.
Yeah, so we flew to Albany and then drove up over there. And those people, they're used to that sort of thing. It didn't affect it at all. We almost sold out, you know, so it was quite, and the moment she walked on the stage, I'll never forget, the crowd just was electric.
I wish I had a video.
Yeah, they come back to her hometown. You know, it was very, very emotional.
You also got to do a sold out show on the other side of the country in the Carpenter's hometown, Downey. That was part of the 55th anniversary, I think.
That's right. Yeah, that was actually our third show at the Downey Theater. And then that third time this past April, which was the same trip that we met Richard during, we were able to line it up with the Carpenters 55th anniversary celebration, which was perfect because we had all these huge Carpenters fans flying in from all over the country and also from many countries all over the world. Mm-hmm. So that was really exciting. Oh, and we had last holiday season, we debuted the orchestra version of our show. So we thought it would be great to do the same thing for this really special Carpenter's 55th celebration show. And so we brought in a small orchestra, and it was really, really special.
Yeah, I scored the music for a string section, adding, it was really, almost make the hair stand up on the back of your neck to hear who sings Superstar, and you hear the violins and the cello coming in and all that. So it was so well received. We're going to do that again on November 30th. We're bringing the Christmas show back.
When did you guys start to incorporate a Christmas show for Carpenter's Legacy?
Well, I put together an early version before I met Ned, just like there was an early version of the regular show. But once I came to Vegas, I mean, very little of that original show remains. We kind of stripped it down and built it back up. And so basically, the new Christmas show is based on the Carpenters' 1977 and 1978 Christmas television specials.
It was shortly after we came out with our original show, which is based on their live performances, particularly in UK back in 1976.
We put it together during COVID because we had so much time, unfortunately, and all of our shows got canceled. So we had wanted to put together the Christmas show anyway, so that was the perfect time to do it.
Yeah, so we did that. And then shortly after we did that, we said, well, one of these days, let's put a Christmas album together. We finally got around to doing it now, which is really interesting because we had record heat. Here's Sally in a recording studio singing Chestnuts Roasting on Open Fire, and it's 120 degrees outside in Las Vegas.
But that's when you do it. You got to do it months in advance. That's when the Carpenters film their Christmas television specials within the summer months. So
yeah.
How did you pare down the set list? The Carpenters recorded 30 some Christmas songs. How did you pick and choose what you were going to use?
Probably the structure of the TV specials was a lot of it, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's also the Christmas songs that we do in our Christmas show. Not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah, it's just how do we decide which ones made the cut, you know?
Right.
And so a lot of it kind of flowed and found itself, you know, like the opening of, she opens with Sleigh Ride. She has an identical white, beautiful white fur coat that Karen wore. And then there was this dialogue within, I can't remember which TV special it was, where Richard doesn't kind of feel the Christmas spirit yet. And as the show evolves, he decides, okay, I'll come to Karen's party after all. You know, and there's a sub theme that goes on. And that was
the 77.
Yeah. And what we decided to do to take it a step further, because it's so nostalgic, we incorporated vintage television commercials within our show. So when we have a little break, because Sally has multiple costume changes, she'll run off and then you'll see an old commercial from the 70s and everyone just, my baloney has a first name, you know. And so everyone kind of takes an extra trip down memory lane when they see her show.
How did the title track of the Christmas album, Christmas Time With You, how did you decide to do your own, an original song with, in the style of the Carpenters?
That came about after the Christmas holiday this year. We were taking down the decorations and stuff and late January, early February, which is early for us. Sometimes we might leave it to next year. No, I'm just kidding, but we're so
busy.
We've
gone as late as March.
Yeah. But we were taking it down and we were both talking about, like, you know, there hasn't been a classic Christmas song that's become a hit in many, many years. Every year you hear the same songs and they're all great. We all know them. We all love them. But there hasn't been something new and refreshing. So I sat at the piano and in a moment, it just hit me. And I started playing a waltz tempo. A lot of them have that sort of jazz waltz type of flavor. You know, like it's a most wonderful time. Or the Christmas waltz, da 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 da. So I started experimenting with a waltz tempo, and then I just started reminiscing about, you know, like it was kind of a personal thing. We both went to go see our families over the holidays, but sometimes we can't go. We have to stay here. Christmas Day, we're doing a show. Christmas. So I incorporated that into the lyrics of the song, you know, about how we would love to see them, but we can't, but at least we have Christmas time with each other. So that's where the title wrapped around when I started experimenting with the melody and the words. And that's how Christmas Time With You came about. And we thought that would be a perfect title for the album. So in addition to that, to give it more of a Carpenters flavor, And that was the other thing we were talking about. Not only would it be nice to bring back a new hit, if you will, but to do it in the flavor of the Carpenters. A lot of their Christmas hits had all these beautiful vocals. So I incorporated jazz harmonies. I'm singing all the voices behind Sally's lead vocal. And it fit so much like a glove. When we brought our drummer in the studio to play, he listened, he gave a listen to like my rough take on the piano, and he went, "Oh yeah, I've heard that before." The Carpenters said, "No, you haven't." It kind of reminds you of a more innocent time back in the 70s, and you know, of family and friends and getting together. So we're very proud of it.
And it fits perfectly. It doesn't, I played it for my wife, and her reaction was, I play a lot of the stuff for my wife because I don't always trust my judgment on it, because I get hundreds of songs sent to me every year. And I played it for her, and she said that if I didn't know, I would think it was a Carpenter's Christmas song, because it sounds, yeah, so you it never fits know. Right
there, in. If it becomes a huge hit, that we hope it will, I'm sure there will be a lot of misinformed people that, hey, oh my goodness, there's this new thing, or where'd this come from? Was it AI? How did they do this? You know, it reminds me of the story when Donkashane came out. Wayne Newton to this day jokes about how a lot of people thought there was this young girl from Germany. It was Donkashane rather than Wayne Newton, you know. So you never know. There could be all kinds of rumors flying about that. But we will be coming out with a video, a lyric video of the thing soon.
Very cool. Because I'm such a Christmas music junkie, I can't help but ask, even though the album is just out, are there any thoughts about a second Christmas album with some of the stuff from the Carpenters' second Christmas album?
Don't know. This is just so soon. We're still wrapping up the, like doing the album credits and then contacting the CD manufacturer and the licensing and all the things that we have to do. We haven't had a chance to take a deep breath, and if it does well, you know, why not? That would, that's anything is possible.
Well, thanks for putting up with that question. I can't help but ask. I can't. if you could, it's, I don't know if it's an obsession, an addiction, I don't know, but Christmas music, there's just never enough. So I always ask everybody, I know you just put out a Christmas album, but when can we have more? I can't help it. You guys are taking the show to New York, New York next year. That's got to be exciting.
Yeah, it's so it'll be at the Triad Theater, which is kind of special because it was doing the show there in April of 2017 that I made the connection that ultimately brought me out to Las Vegas and how I met Ned. And so we decided, wouldn't it be fun to bring it back kind of to where it all started?
Yeah.
Are there plans to take the show more on the road more?
Well, it's a little early to say. We can't say any details yet because it's just in the talk stages. Nothing has been signed or confirmed, but fingers crossed, we are speaking with some promoters in Germany.
Wow.
About a possible, maybe a television special and also a concert. And we even had a private Zoom meeting with him last night and with some talented performers from Germany that thought, wouldn't it be interesting to take, similar to the way the Carpenters used to like to take songs and do them in multiple languages, like sing a song. Yeah, they did it in Japanese. Sally recently recorded a version of Superstar in Spanish. And so we thought it would be interesting for their German TV audiences is maybe we'll have these other performers come out and maybe sing a verse of Christmas Time with You in German. They say that the Christmas holiday is very, very powerful and very big over there. And so we're excited. That would be, for this season, we're booked solid, but that might be for 2025. So it's in the planning stages. So stay tuned.
How about any kind of video release of, I don't want to call it regular, but your regular show or the Christmas show? Is there any thoughts about that where people who aren't able to get to where you're playing will still be able to get to see the show?
Yeah, well, we do have on Vivo, which is on YouTube, our music video we did of what we call Spanish superstar, where she sings it in Spanish and then she brings it out in English at the end. In addition to that, of course, there are video snippets and clips and just hundreds of things of us on YouTube. To do an entire show like that, honestly, unfortunately, the licensing would be so cost prohibitive. It isn't like when you record a record and there's usually you can go to Harry Fox Agency and then they take the fee out and it's simple. It's very complicated with the video. It takes permission from the composers of every song directly. It's a negotiation. So we just encourage our fans to come out to Las Vegas to come see us in person or come go to our tour page on carpenterslegacy.com. We're all over the place. We were just in Texas a couple of weeks ago. We're back with a Christmas show there. We're doing a Downey Theater. We're in Harris, Michigan, Upper Peninsula.
Island Resort Casino.
Mm-hmm. There. And
we're going to be back in Texas at the Eisman Center on January 11th.
Right. And then April, of course, we're in Tri Theater. And then we were recently speaking with somebody about, where was that at? We were on the phone
in
with
Connecticut.
That. In Connecticut.
Waterbury, Connecticut, which is also really cool because the Carpenters, although Downey, California claims them as their own, they were born in New Haven, Connecticut. And the parents moved them out to Southern California when they were in, middle school for Karen and high school for Richard. But being from New England myself, I've been wanting to be Connecticut. So it looks like we may be doing that next summer, late summer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we told it no more snowstorms. They said, oh, can you come in February? We're like, no, sorry. Let's do the summer. It's safer.
Is there anything about your regular show or about either the Christmas show or the new album that you wish I would have asked that you didn't get to talk about?
Anything about, one thing that I could, I'm asked frequently, how do we recreate the Carpenters sound? And it the only way to do it properly is to do it in the exact same manner that they did. What they did, Richard, of course, it being such a musical genius that he is, most of the arrangements came from Richard, in addition to some of the compositions, of course, you know, like Goodbye to Love and Top of the World. But the only way to do it and create it authentically is to sing every voice twice. So in Christmas Time with You, it is 6-part harmony. Some places is 5. So in a when we were recording the tracks for that, it takes 12 tracks just to do the 6-part harmony on top of everything else. And so there's a lot of complexities that people think, oh, you just go in, play, and go home. No, it can take months. It can take over a year to put an album together. When we were doing our original album, the hits medley alone, our engineer decided that a recording engineer decided that let's have a separate set of tracks for each song within the hits medley. And it's a long medley. It's, what is it, 8-9 songs? And it runs like over 12 minutes long. Well, by the time we finished, just the hits medley had over 182 tracks.
Wow.
And so once in a while, if we have to do a re-edit or something for a special show, our engineer's pulling his hair out like, oh my God, I'm going crazy. He has to juggle 180 something tracks to put it together. So yeah, there's a lot of that. Also, another thing about the albums, especially the first one, we definitely want to give kudos to our Las Vegas based musicians. John Plow's on drums. We also have Mark Barrett is the drummer on Christmas Time with You, and he enjoyed doing the sleigh bells as well. And Jim DiRigo plays saxophone and flute. We have Mark Spites playing guitar. We're very proud of those. The other instruments that you hear, like the strings and the harp glisses and all that, that's me on the synthesizer replicating a lot of that in studio. So we're very proud of it. And the only way to do the vocals, you have to do it in the same manner that they did.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed in listening to your first album, 1976, and also the Christmas album, is that it all sounds real. There's so many times you'll hear newer music and you can pick out, well, that's a machine, or, you know, They didn't, you know, they didn't go for that natural, authentic sound.
Yeah, and it has to sound organic, you know. We wish we'd have had $100,000 budget, but we're not in that position. But it has to sound authentic and organic. Even when I was recreating the Heart Blisses, we don't have a budget to fly in a harpist from Los Angeles to do that, you know. So I'm actually doing it, you know, in the keys, and the engineer started laughing, you know, so, oh my God, yeah, that was cool, you know. And so to put that together, and of course, I'm playing a grand piano and we have a live drummer. I don't like drum machines, you know. And so we did try to bring it as authentic as we could. And like we said, we always had in the back of our minds when we were recording this, if Karen and Richard were still churning out big popular hits, what would a Dear Latest Christmas hit sound like? And that's the perspective that we took when putting this project together.
What's the best way for people to catch up with you or connect? Is it through your website, social media?
Yeah, both. Our website is carpenterslegacy.com. We're on all the favorite social media platforms. A big one for us is Facebook, and then Instagram.
TikTok.
Yeah. X, formerly Twitter.
Yeah.
What else? I'm even doing more stuff on LinkedIn now. So I try to cover all. Oh, yeah. And YouTube has their own little social media section called Community, which I am now actively doing that as well.
And she's very active. She's the busiest workaholic I've ever met in my life. So the web design, the graphic design, she has a visual art experience. She studied in Philadelphia. She studied in Italy. She even has this beautiful watercolor of Karen and Miss Piggy. It's really nice. We have that available at our shows. And the videos in the show, everything, that's all her. So I do the music and the arranging, you know, the recording in the studio, and she handles the visual end. So I'm very proud of it. Yeah, the website, social media, that's all Sally. So
I'll make sure to put links for all of that down in the show notes too, including a link where people can buy or stream the new album, Christmas Time with You. Thank you guys so much for spending so much time with us and talking about all things Carpenters and Christmas music.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ken.
And thank you so much for listening, helping me share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is really just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page, which lists most, if not all, of the streaming sites where the podcast is available. So you can scroll through, pick out your favorite, click on over, and then subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. If you're listening to this episode on your phone, you can also click the Send Us a Text Message link and connect that way. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.